Hello, and welcome to Catholic Schools New South Wales Wellbeing Podcast. I'm Jenny Cohen. The use of drugs and alcohol amongst young people is often a very hot topic of conversation. As much as parents may not like to think about it, the truth is that many kids and teens try alcohol during their high school years. Here to talk to us about kids, drugs and alcohol is Paul Dillon. Paul is a director and founder of Drug and Alcohol Research and Training Australia. Welcome, Paul.
Nice to be with you, Jenny. Thank you for having me.
What's your role and what exactly do you do?
Well, I've been around for a very long time. I've been around for about, in the area of alcohol and other drug education, about 30 years now. Currently, I own my own business, as you said, and essentially what I do is my main role would be speaking to young people, presenting to young people and school communities. So I speak to about 200 schools a year and talk to about 120,000 young people. And my kind of aim is to try to help them kind of navigate through their teens, give them tips and strategies to keep them safe, as well as the best quality information I can so they can make informed choices.
Yeah, making good choices is obviously an extremely big issue, not only with young people, but with all of us. What's the current research telling us are the number one issues for kids and young people at the moment?
Well, if you're looking at kind of hard data about what's currently going on with school-based young people, and I suppose I need to kind of emphasise everything that we're going to be talking about today would be around school-based young people. If they have disengaged from school or they've left school, it's a very different story. But when it comes to school-based young people in this country, we have some really good data collection instruments. The survey that many people may be aware of is called the ASAD survey, the Australian Secondary School Alcohol and Drug Survey. They interview about 23,000 young people across all sectors, independent, public and Catholic. And we get that data once every couple of years. Unfortunately, the last data was going to be collected in 2020 and, of course, COVID hit. So I'm not quite sure when we'll get the next kind of results. But the previous data in 2017 showed some really positive things. And one of the main ones is that we have the highest number of non-drinkers amongst our school-based young people that we've really ever seen. To give you some sort of an idea of how things have changed, back in 1999, we had one in 10, 12 to 17-year-olds who had never drunk alcohol. It's now one in three. So that's a significant shift, a cultural shift. When it comes to other drugs, the illicit drugs, some drugs have gone up slightly, certainly, but others are still at very low rates. Cannabis, for example, although we are seeing kind of an upward tick at the moment, is really half the rate it was, half the number that we were seeing in the 90s, for example. So there's some very positive things and some things which are a bit more concerning. But I think you've got to rely... As much as that data from 2017 is interesting, you've also got to rely now on other kind of information and certainly anecdotal. What are young people talking to me about? What are teachers saying to me? Those kind of things. And there are some really interesting things happening there.
So what are young people talking to you about in terms of, say, popular drugs of choice?
Look, I think the issue that certainly has just kind of skyrocketed in a very short period of time would be vaping and the use of e-cigarettes. That really has jumped quite dramatically. And I have not been to a school. I have not talked to any teachers who have not asked me specifically to address that concern. For the very first time this year, I'm talking about vaping with each year group that I speak to. I only speak to your 10s, 11s and 12s. I don't go any younger than that. And I speak to them three times over 3 years. But for the very first time, I'm giving information on vaping to all year groups. And that has never happened in all the years that I've done what I do. So it certainly is out there. And the most interesting thing about vaping is that it's an alcohol and other drug issue that has come into schools. We have not seen that for a very long time. When I taught many years ago, I was a teacher myself, back in the late 70s, early 80s, you were seeing kids bringing cannabis to school and, you know, doing other things like that. But that hasn't happened for a long time. The number of suspensions, expulsions that I've seen across the country, teachers, schools trying to deal with young people bringing vaping devices into schools is I don't think schools have quite worked out how to deal with it. And they don't know very much about it, of course, because it's, you know, it's such a new phenomenon. The first e-cigarette was invented in 2003. So they've only been around for 18 years. So we know very little about the long-term impacts of use or the devices themselves, because we're just seeing, you're not just talking about one thing, you're talking about a whole pile of different products and things that could be contained, that can be contained in a vape.
Okay, and I think, as you said, it's interesting for adults because, A, I think kids tend to think that it's safer to vape than it is to, say, smoke or do other things, but also there's vaping substances with nicotine and there's ones without. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's exactly right. What you're talking about is, I suppose, that key issue of, oh, it's safer than. I've always had problems with the word safer, because what does safer really mean? You know, it's most probably safer being hit by a car than being hit by a bus, but you really don't want to do either of those things. You know, the safest option is not to vape, but is vaping safer than smoking? Most probably. So people have to unpack that with kids, which can be very, very difficult. And then, as you said, you've got different things that people are vaping. You've got just a flavour. You've got nicotine plus a flavour. And you've also got, certainly this is growing quite quickly, is cannabis plus a flavour. Schools and parents are kind of trying to work out, well, how do we have a conversation about this? Because they don't know anything, and kids are great at bamboozling both their parents and teachers with this kind of, like, these very pat lines of, but I'm not smoking. It's safer than smoking. I'm only vaping a flavour. There was a study done by New South Wales Health where they looked at a whole pile of products that claimed to be no nicotine. They found that 70% of them actually did contain, some of them, extremely high levels of nicotine. So, you know, it's an unregulated industry. 90% of all vapes are manufactured in one city in China. So, you know, realistically, you don't know what you're vaping. You may think you do. And we certainly don't want to have a new generation of young people dependent on nicotine, addicted to nicotine. And they might not even realise that they are vaping nicotine. So it's a real kind of, it's a very now issue. I've done this for a long time, and I can't think of any kind of drug-related issue that is so, that really has exploded so quickly and has kind of covered everywhere. Like, it doesn't matter where you go across the country, it's an issue across all sectors. And I'm even getting primary schools who are contacting me, who are catching, you know, year fives who are vaping in toilets. So,
well, that's extremely concerning, obviously, isn't it? And so where do kids purchase the substance then? Is that purchasing online over the internet, or can you walk into a shop and buy it?
Look, once again, it's very complicated because of the different devices. If you're under 18, you are not legally able to buy an e-cigarette anywhere across the country. But then when you have the nicotine kind of added to it, you've got a whole pile of other issues, because there's Commonwealth laws, there's state laws. Adults who want to vape nicotine have to apply to the TGA to get a special kind of license to actually vape nicotine.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I mean, they've, in New South Wales, they've just upped significantly the penalty for the fine for importing vapes containing nicotine and selling them to underage young people. The fine is like something like over $200,000. It's huge. But I think the law often tries to keep up with these kind of issues and fails dismally. And of course, the whole purpose of vaping, it was developed as a nicotine replacement therapy to kind of help smokers quit smoking cigarettes. So you've got a very, very powerful lobby group who are trying to say, look, this is incredibly important. It's a harm reduction strategy for smokers. And then you've got the other side of the people going, well, the public health people saying this is actually a gateway to future smoking. So at the moment, it's a polarised debate. And as always with these things, and because I've been around for so long, I've seen it happen many, many times, is that kids kind of get caught up in the middle of it. You know, the adults are having this conversation about this debate about nicotine replacement therapies, and they're forgetting that there's these teens and younger. I mean, we're talking children, 10, 11 years old, who are messing around with this, who get caught up in it. We don't really deal with that particularly well. We never have.
Okay, so how do we engage young people in conversations around, let's say, vaping? As you said, that's like the latest trend. How do we as teachers and parents engage kids in useful and helpful conversations about vaping?
Well, I think the most important thing that you've got to do with young people is be honest with them. I think if we know scare tactics don't work, trying to terrify them and saying, look, if you do this, you're going to die, your brain's going to kind of, you know, fall out of your ear or something like that. Kids today have the world at their fingertips. You know, they have so much information they are able to access incredibly easily. And if you give them information that is incorrect, you lie to them, they're certainly you're going to lose your credibility. And certainly parents never get credibility back ever once they've lied to their kids, particularly in this area. And it's the same with teachers. So it's important that you collect as much information as you possibly can. If you don't know very much, learn with your child. That's what I always say. I think it's a really good way of kind of a good strategy to, if your child says, vaping is safe, well, let's actually go and find out if that's true. You show me the websites that say that and I'll go and let's have a look at it. I wrote a blog not very long ago, which kind of answered gave some of the answers to the questions that kids would usually, because kids get fire these statements out about vaping, and parents and teachers are just totally bamboozled. They have no idea how to respond. We saw the same thing with ecstasy and MDMA about 10 years ago when you started seeing that bubbling up and a group of parents who had no idea what this drug was. When something new comes up, parents find it difficult to kind of talk about. And as a result, they often don't have the conversation. Certainly around vaping, the Royal Melbourne Hospital, I think, did a survey of parents around parents and vaping issues. And they found that, yep, parents were worried about vaping, but were they talking about it? No. They were likely to talk about alcohol. Yes, they were a little less likely to talk about illicit drugs, a little less likely to talk about smoking, but vaping, practically not at all. So I think when parents feel like they could lose face or they don't feel knowledgeable enough, they feel like the kids know more than they do, then often the conversation doesn't happen.
Okay, and I think it is really important to actually have that conversation from the perspective of trying to minimise any risk involved in the young person engaging in any activity, whether it's vaping or not. But you're right, I think as a parent myself, I know, and something I wanted to ask you about was this issue about purchasing substances online. I mean, I am aware you can purchase vaping, I'll just call them substances online. But as a parent, I was really surprised to hear about that and find out about that. And probably during COVID was the time it came to my attention, particularly in my capacity as a state manager for wellbeing in a school sector. You hear a lot about mental health and wellbeing of young people, and that was brought up as an issue last year. How dangerous is it to purchase online? And how come kids know how to do this and we as adults actually don't know what's going on?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. One comment I'd like to make about through COVID. COVID was a very interesting period in terms of alcohol and other drugs because there was so many international surveys and Australian studies looking at what COVID did to the what impact it had on the access, availability and use of substances. And what I saw happen quite clearly was there was a move to certain substances that were much more able to be delivered to your home. There were delivery services, online services, so they came in the post.
Can you give us an example?
Oh, well, I think examples would certainly be vaping and vaping devices, nanging, the use of nitrous oxide, little whipped cream cartridges. There are services, there are apps that young people can actually purchase that will actually push a button and they will be delivered to your door. And of course, cannabis as well, because it was lots of other drugs, ecstasy, heroin, cocaine, those kind of drugs are imported. So of course, COVID had an impact on the availability of those. And of course, some of those drugs, ecstasy, for example, are linked to certain kind of events like
dance parties,
and nightclubs. Of course, those weren't happening. So that kind of drug kind of dropped off. But these other drugs that were very easily able to be able to access via online delivery services really kind of came to their own, and they haven't gone away. Certainly I have a blog that I write for young people that they ask me questions. And the top two questions I get asked over and over again are about vaping, number one, that's by Mars, and second is nanging, nitrous oxide, use of that, and is it dangerous? Can it kill you? That kind of thing.
And is it dangerous?
Look, it's a very low-risk drug compared to a lot of others. I'd be very careful about, repeating that to a young person possibly, but it is low-risk compared to other things. But, when you have, 12 or 13-year-olds who are sharing images on Snapchat of them, inhaling nitrous oxide through a balloon and, walking intoxicated. You've got to ask, if you're 12 and 13 and you're doing that, where does that go afterwards? So although it might not be, certainly there have been deaths. We had a young man who died at schoolies a number of years ago on the Gold Coast who fell off a balcony after nanging. So it's not risk-free, but all those kind of drugs kind of came up through COVID. But your second part of your question about this, the whole online thing, I've been blown away this term, going around schools and talking about vaping and talking about other things. I had two young women who came up to me, year 12 girls, who just said, "Do you want to see how fast it is for us to access vapes if we want?" And I said, "Well, okay, show me." And they basically got Snapchat out, which I don't have. I know nothing about Snapchat. And it went boom, 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 boom. And literally within 10 minutes, they had a person who would be at a train station nearby who would deliver whatever they wanted, a list of them. But more frightening, I was in another city, not in New South Wales, and I'd just spoken about ecstasy or MDMA to a group of year 12s, and a young man came up and said, "Do you want to know how easy it is to buy ecstasy?" And I said, "Well, I had to talk about duty of care and, all of that kind of self-disclosure." But he opened up an app, which I'd never heard of, called, I think it's Telegram or Telegraph, but I think it's Telegram. And he literally pushed three buttons. He was in a group chat, which had a whole pile of people. He pushed one kind of person, and up came about five or six images of different pills and caps of MDMA. And then he pushed a couple of other buttons, texted something, and we're talking 5 minutes. This was absolute tops 5 minutes. He then had a text which said, "I can be at the school gate in 15 minutes with the caps, have the money." It was quite most probably one of the most alarming things I've ever seen in a school context, that it is that easy. And my question was exactly what you just asked me. How do they know this kind of stuff? And it is word of mouth, and it's, young people who do, not all young people are going to purchase online because there's that fear of getting caught and all that kind of stuff. They're aware of that. But the young people who are kind of willing to take that risk, financially, it is incredibly, they get a lot of financial benefit from it. There was a case last year of a couple of young men in year 12 at a school who made something like $10,000-$15,000 in a number of weeks by importing vapes from China. An international border at their school had not come back from China, couldn't get back into the country. They made contact with him. He was able to access vapes in China. He packaged them up, sent them to them, and they had a thriving business until they got caught. Made a phenomenal amount of money in a short period of time just on selling them. And if you look at the ads, the data on how many kids of 14-year-olds see adverts for illicit drugs on Snapchat and Instagram, it's quite remarkable. Snapchat is the big one by a mile, where they get to be able to access those kind of things.
Well, and it is extremely concerning. And I think some of the apps you've talked about, and I've heard of Discord as well, are apps generally that adults or grown-ups don't actually use. So a whole lot of stuff can happen. And we know this through the internet, inside your child's bedroom, where you might think they're quite safe. But as I said, during COVID, this really came to the forefront. And it is something that I think teachers and parents do need to know a lot about. So thank you very much for your insight. I mean, it is concerning, but I think we need to be alert more so than alarmed and freak out, because we do need to understand what it is that the young people that we care for are engaged in, so we can actually have a conversation.
Yeah, and look, I think it's very, very important to kind of be, to put a balance here, to give kind of a context to the whole situation. Yes, the availability and access to a range of substances is much greater than it once was, without any doubt, because drug use was typically bought through friendship networks. It was someone who knew somebody, and that's how it was done in the past. Now it's done in a very different way. The good news is that all the data that we have about school-based young people suggests that the vast majority of them are not interested. They do not use these substances. Now, that's not to say, I don't want anyone who's listening to this thinking, oh, you're looking through the world with rose-coloured sunglasses and all that kind of rose-coloured sunglasses. I don't know if that's the right phrase, but, you know, you're looking at the world that way. There's lots and lots of problems. Of course there are. There are young people who are certainly using illicit drugs and certainly getting into difficulty with them. But every bit of data that we have says the same thing, that the vast majority don't. Now, that changes when they leave school, without any doubt, for a whole pile of different reasons. But whilst they're at school, in many ways, they are protected. But that, as you said, parents, teachers need to be alert to the changes that are occurring in this area. The changes around access, the changes around availability, how young people access drugs, where they get information from. That's incredibly important because, you know, I get journal articles fired at me, you know, give a bit of information to a group of young people, and young people come up and they actually give you a publication plus, you know, the journal entry, the page numbers, etc. But the reality is that they cherry pick their information like everyone does. I mean, you know, you want to justify your behaviour. And so what young people do is they find an internet site that says to them if they want to use cannabis, then cannabis is not a problem. It's, you know, it's God's sweet nectar. And they will find a website that says that, very easy. But it's also a website that you'll find that it's, you know, the devil's own weed. And so it's about making sure that as a parent, as a teacher, that we teach them to be critical thinkers, that we challenge misinformation when we can, and we learn with them. If, you know, there has been many times over the years that a young person will say to me, oh, what about this? And they use a term I've never heard before. Now, instead of being defensive and going, oh, that's not a real thing, or making something up, I'm not afraid to turn around and say, I have no idea what that is. Can you help me there? And I think that for teachers, that's a real challenge. Teachers find that really challenging to say, I don't know, and let's learn together. And I think parents are very reticent to do it as well. Adults believe with young people that they know more. They could certainly say a lot more than we can, but do they actually know more? Most probably not. And do they know all the information? No, they know the bits that they actually want to pick up. And so it's kind of, there are ways, I think, for both parents and teachers to kind of navigate through this a little bit better than we possibly do.
Look, I think that's absolutely wonderful advice. Thank you so much, Paul, for joining us today on the Wellbeing Podcast.
Thank you.
I'm Jenny Cohen.